Oh, I think Grogu's leaving Luke in the next episode. I don't think he's going to be a Jedi.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think he's going to say, give me my chainmail shirt. You can keep the lightsaber. It's old anyway. I'm good.
I don't even know what the heck a Yoda is, you know.
And then teasing us with, do you remember what your people were like? I can help you. I
can help you remember. Oh, look at that. Trauma.
Massacre of the Jedi. Oh, yeah. I remember that. Thanks.
Yeah, I totally remember that. Thanks, Filoni. It's Filoni's world and we're just living in it.
Welcome to Death Watch, the Star Wars podcast from a galaxy not so far, far away. I'm Mike Bennett.
And I'm Chris Skull.
And today we'll be doing a two-episode recap of the Book of Boba Fett, including Chapter 5, Return of the King, Mandalorian, and Chapter 6, From the Desert Comes a Stranger. And I just want to say real quick, sorry guys, we didn't have an episode last week. Right before, like literally 2 minutes before recording, my son had a medical issue. We had to go to the hospital, and so we just called it off. He's doing fine. He's like 100%. But thanks for your patience. And to reward you, rather than skipping episode 5 altogether, we're going to go cover both this week. So Chapter 5. I saw a great meme for it with like the Return of the King font from Lord of the Rings, but with Mando, it was appropriate. It's how it felt this whole episode as well.
Yeah. Even the way that they opened the episode, it was like almost exactly the way that we saw Mando in the first episode, mm-hmm. you know, like the proverbial saloon doors. He's coming in with just like a shadowy figure. The flutes are playing, you know, it's like
the pan flute,
you know, so he, it's very clear that this episode, Chapter 5, is just going to be all Mandalorian. Why? I was actually really expecting him to just show up later. You know, it was definitely heavily foreshadowed in the episode previous that he was going to show up. But the moment he steps in, the moment that he gets all this FaceTime, you know that this episode is going to be all about him.
Yep. And he comes into this place. He starts fighting people. He's got his darksaber. You know, it comes out pretty quickly. And you know, he overall just seems not quite himself.
Yeah.
You know, the last time we saw him, he just let Grogu go, who he's obviously very emotionally connected to. And then he had this whole thing. And he gets the darksaber, which makes him leader of the Mandalorian people. But he's like fighting these guys and he's like super clunky. Like, he's cutting them in half, but like
cuts himself almost, too.
Yeah. Right. He cuts his leg. He looks like he's like drunk. Like he's not swinging, which I guess is not impossible, but
right.
He's like struggling to swing the sword and, he looks like he's just kind of out of it. So, not really all there. So, but anyway, it was just cool to see him back in action with the darksaber right away.
Yeah.
I do feel like this is, so we talked about at the end of season 2 of The Mandalorian, what would the beginning to season 3 look like? And we've got to resolve, we were making fun of it last week. It's like, they have to resolve all these issues, right? They've got Moff Gideon, who's captured. Mando has the darksaber and there's the tension with Bo-Katan. Luke took Grogu. There's like all this stuff here. And then like, we just skip past it and find Mando seemingly a week or two later or more. I guess it's several weeks later based on the Book of Boba Fett sort of storyline. But we just sort of skip all of that. There's some brief mention like, oh, yeah, by the way, Moff Gideon, he's in prison with the New Republic. They'll take care of him. But it all just like just quickly glossed over a very tense ending to that season. It was like a cliffhanger and we didn't do anything with that. So Mando takes care of the bounty he had, but it was clear he was just using that to get some information, which leads him to the armorer and the remaining covert that he was a part of on Devaro. They've relocated to apparently Master Chief's Halo ring is now part of Halo canon or Star Wars canon.
Also, what probably the best elevator scene I've ever seen in Star Wars. We've had awkward elevator scenes and this one just takes the cake. It was really ahead of its time, so to speak.
Yeah, almost as bad as when Obi-Wan and Anakin are talking about his angsty feelings over Padme.
almost as bad.
Yeah. But so we see the covert, and it's down to just the armorer and Paz Vizsla, which was pretty. I mean, we saw the pile of Mandalorian armor on Navarro. Knew a lot of them had been killed.
Yeah,
but I did not think it was this many.
Yeah, I was expecting some more survivors, but I didn't realize that it was that bad.
Yeah, well, and it kind of seems like they've only really brought her back for some exposition. Mm-hmm. Like we need to cover some story material pretty quickly.
Yeah.
That woman was pretty good at it. Let's bring her back real quick and gives us like the canon information on what the Darksaber is. Cause it's clear Mando doesn't know what he's doing with this sword. And she kind of tells him, yeah, there is a real reason why you're struggling with it. It's a lightsaber from the only Mandalorian Jedi. It's 1,000 years old. It's made of Beskar, but it will fight you in combat if you aren't using it properly. It's not just a sword you pick up and use. It will get heavier and heavier with each movement. Mm-hmm. And you see that as he's swinging it, and that starts to make sense why he was so clunky before. What did you think of that?
There's a tie-in with Rebels, where Sabine, she has the Darksaber, she acquires it for a little bit, and then Kanan Jarrus is training her, and I forget the exact verbiage, but he uses very similar, he describes it in a very similar manner, but the only difference is that Sabine is able to wield it a lot better than Din, probably because her mind is more focused than Din is, and we know this because Armor's like, you need to focus. And he goes, yeah, I'm totally focused. And he says it like as unfocused as possible. Yeah. So he clearly has something going on in his head. We know it's Grogu and how he's doing and such. So he's going to have a bad time until he learns to let go mentally of this thing that's happening in the back of his head. And then he'll be able to wield it better.
Yeah. The other piece of exposition we get here is an update on Mandalore. And, you know, we've heard in seasons past the Day of 1,000 Tears or the fact that Mandalore has been glassed or bombed or destroyed, or, you know, that we've heard it a few different times from a few different people. But we get a flashback video of the Empire bombing Mandalore, dropping bombs all over the planet surface. You see the iconic like capital city dome enclosure that gets bombed. And then there's like afterwards in the flames, there's droids walking around. They look like the K2 SO droid from Rebels, just walking around and
from
shooting the bodies. And yeah, what did I say?
Rebels. But yeah.
Oh yeah. Remnant Rogue One. Yeah. Walking around and shooting essentially the corpses of the Mandalorians to make sure that they're dead, which in my mind doesn't make any sense because they're all wearing Beskar, right? So even if they aren't dead, you're shooting them and it's just bouncing off of their
armor. So wait a minute. You did have the means to shoot them down and you didn't use it before you bombed them? I don't know.
Yeah, I have another question about blasters shooting Beskar armor for the Chapter 6 version of half of this episode. So we'll come back to it.
Got it.
But yeah, it is... Anyway, a rough scene to watch. Some nice dramatic music, and we see why Mandalore is no more. And what's funny is the Armorer is like, the only reason we survived is because A, we were part of our sect, Death Watch or whatever they called themselves at the time.
Yeah, they were on Concord Dawn.
The moon of which we saw in Rebels. Mm-hmm. Like the Death Watch was stationed out there. So it makes sense that there was still an encampment there. Brings up some questions about what other Mandalorians are still alive. We know Bo-Katan and her Night Owls were still around, you know, during this time.
And how did they survive?
Yeah, how did they survive?
Yeah.
And who else, like how many survived with her? Is it like, we've just seen Koska Reeves and I forget the other guy's name. Or whatever. The three of them total, is it just them? But she sort of talks like there's more too. So there's probably more Mandalorians out there for Din to find.
Right.
But for now, he's got his two as a part of his creed.
Speaking of Bo-Katan, Armor warns against Bo-Katan and the House of Krees, the House of Mandalore, because she says that they lost their way. And she talks about
this is the way.
She goes, this is not the way. They were not the way. We are the way. Okay. We also have to remember Paz Vizsla is involved. He's there. Vizsla is an important name. Somewhere, I feel like somewhere in season one, we were told, no, it's just a callback. No, his name is just a callback. And then now they're tying in the fact that, yes, he is an actual direct descendant of Tar Vizsla. And, you know, there's tension, not just tension, there's a conflict and there's a challenge to wield the Darksaber. Paz doesn't win. He's fought into submission.
Yeah, but it's also close. It's not.
Yeah. It is pretty close.
There's a moment where you're like, oh, maybe Din Djarin loses the Darksaber and then that's the end of that part of his storyline.
Right, exactly.
But then he turns around and he's getting ready to like slice his throat and Armor's like, all right, no. we're done. All right,
we're done here. But that part, then she's like, Din Djarin, have you ever removed your helmet? And there is this awkward pause. He can't, you know, he's not going to lie. He can't say no. It's
right. We hear this refrain in previous seasons where it's like clearly part of them communicating to each other, the reiteration of their creed to each other. And she's like, have you ever removed your helmet? No. Has anyone removed it for you? No. And then they say, this is the way. So we've seen them do that already. So yeah. She does it again, starts with Paz Vizsla. He says, no. This is the way. And then she says it to Din and he goes silent. And she's like, you've got to answer.
He can't lie. We know the real the reasons why he did it were noble. So from the part of the audience, like we're agreeing with Din. He did what he had to do, not as a means of survival, but for the survival and for others.
Yeah.
But it goes against their way. So basically at this point, he gets kicked out of his covert and he picks up his toys and leaves, including the Darksaber. And it looks to me like, all right, this is the end for him and his the way.
I kind of didn't get this because, I guess I understand the effects of the creed, and she just told us the only reason we survived the purge is because we adhered strictly to the way.
Yeah.
So I can understand her perspective on why you have to adhere to it, but he also just. He got the Darksaber and is like, she should be recognizing him as the leader of Mandalore. And like, she has no submission to him in language or in like, he is clearly submissive to her.
To her, yeah. I think it's a mentality thing, because if he started enacting a more leadership role, then she probably would follow through. But then again, she's also part of the old ways of the Mandalorian, which is, we survived, but we're not thriving.
Yeah.
And this is going to play into a theme and to a larger theory, which he, in my opinion, he will be Mandalore, and he's going to find a way to bridge the old ways and the new ways. But he's going to do it like on his terms. It's like, look, Armor, you can join me, or you can stick to your old ways and hole underneath the Halo ring, and then that's it. You don't have to join up.
That's a good point. You said a hole in the ground. She did say the only way to atone for the sins of taking his helmet off was like traditionally was something like to go into the mines, the lake in the mines underneath Mandalore. Seemed like some physical place in the like underneath Mandalore that seems like it was destroyed or maybe. But I think there could be something here where like we may come back to this and Din tries to get propitiation for his sins by doing that thing or finding a way to do it.
Quote unquote sins. Maybe from the perspective of his creed or the creed of Death Watch, but not necessarily, you know, like he did anything wrong.
Yeah. Murdering people and destroying the universe. But for taking his helmet off.
Yeah. The murdering is fine. That's okay. Yeah. This is the way.
This is the way. It'll be interesting if like he does. I'm curious of what is going on Mandalore, the planet. Like if there's still stuff to actually be recovered, and maybe that place still exists where he could, you know, redeem himself. So you mentioned before, I forget. I had a good transition and I just lost it. So the next story element, he has to replace the Razor Crest.
Yeah.
So he goes to his favorite used car lot.
used car dealer.
To see our favorite used car dealer person at Pelimoto on Tatooine. But before that, we get this like hilarious little bit where he has to take a commercial flight and ride in coach.
He has to take a space Greyhound bus
and go through TSA security. It was so just like gratifying to be like, oh yeah. I mean, not that I have to get rid of my sniper bolts and my sword and my knives
and
my
individual missiles. Whistling bird one by one, but and then like meters and meters of rope.
It felt like me, you know, having to take my belt and shoes off to prove that I'm not a threat.
Shoes, wallet, keys, phone, hat, glasses. So, and yet the jetpack was fine.
I know. And everything else about him that could kill anybody on that plane by the bare hands. But anyway, he gets to Tatooine. He's clearly like he got a call from her. He had asked her to find him a Razor Crest. So he thinks he's here to get one. We get some great fan service in this sequence. We see a BD droid in live action, like BD-8 from Fallen Order.
Yeah.
It's cool to see another BD droid because he's so versatile in the game. Like, why are there not
more
a lot of these droids everywhere? Mm-hmm. And then the big deal was the ship that she has for him. Well, A, it's not a ship. It's a pile of parts. But it's not a pile of parts for a Razor Crest.
It's literally a chassis.
Yeah. It's a Naboo starfighter, N1 starfighter. Yeah.
I thought initially, I didn't recognize it at first. That's how bad it was to me. I thought it was a pod racer, which wouldn't make sense because it also happened on Tatooine. But like, what is he going to do with a pod racer?
Yeah.
He can't fly that out.
I don't see why this ship makes sense for Mando because we see all the work that he does has been like capturing bounties, which is getting people like their whole body often carbon frozen, and it's a lot of stuff. The N1 starfighter has, I mean, he even looks awkward sitting in the cockpit. Like there's no room for him, let alone if he brought a bagged lunch, he wouldn't have a place to put it.
Now I've got this image of Mando with Tupperware, with like Beskar Tupperware in a paper bag.
He's like, sorry guys, this is my leftovers from last night. I'm trying to be frugal.
Give me a second. I'm on a keto diet. So this whole montage that we get of him building the ship. And stuff, I love it. It seems to me that he is not going to exercise that life of pursuing bounties anymore, because he even said like there's the little bubble dome on the top for the droid thing. They seal that off. So there's, you know, we don't know if he's going to use a droid or not. We really, there's no way, like you said, he can fit another human being, another person.
It's for Grogu.
Put a little,
it's the little Grogu capsule,
a little Beskar child seat with a little seat belt. No, he's not going to, my theory is he's not going to be pursuing bounties anymore. He's going to be more of an enforcer or some sort of, not necessarily like a peace officer.
I guess he's a ruler of Mandalore at the moment. So
right. So technically his priorities are a little different than trying to get some extra cash. So this, the whole him getting the ship, whether or not you like the fact that it was the N1 starfighter, it signifies he no longer has the minivan. Now he's got like the Corvette.
Yeah.
And his focus is getting to where he needs to go quiet and fast, and then that's it.
Yeah.
So this is to me another one signifier that his path has now changed, because he physically can't be a bounty hunter anymore. He literally can't.
Unless he's just chopping people's heads off for all future bounties. He just then tosses them up
in the bubble dome.
Yeah.
It's more efficient, I'll give you that.
Yeah. It is. The other cool little fan service here was he asked the Jawas, and there's this whole little side thing with Peli dating a Jawa, which was unnecessary and weird.
I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. But Mando asks them for a specific part, and I forget what he called it. But they find it, and it's hilarious. They like boosted it off of a pipe space freighter.
Good on them, man. Good
he just
them.
Like crawled underneath it and unhooked it and took it.
I have this image of like the pikes showing up and then their ship is like on cinder blocks.
Oh, that would be awesome if in the finale one of the pikes cruisers like blows up and crashes because
it doesn't have like that transmission.
Yeah. So this part is actually the pull from the trash compactor scene in A New Hope when they're on the Death Star, which is, we also saw it in season one when Mando's walking through Navarro. There was one in a dumpster in an alley.
That's right.
Background Easter egg. It's not even a thing, but it has the same like ridges and whatever. So worthless piece of fan service to give a name to this part and use it, but it is what it is. I also have a hot take here that Pelimoto is a Mary Sue. Do you know what that means?
Why don't you explain it to me?
Okay. So it's the same thing that people accuse them of doing with Rey. Mm-hmm. Is that she just like has almost, there's no character arc. It's just like, for no reason can do anything whenever she wants, like mm-hmm. sort of like is invincible, can get any new skill. Like Rey is able to fly the Millennium Falcon after being a desert rat for 20 years, having never left the planet. And somehow she's all of a sudden an amazing pilot. Peli can get anything Mando needs, can take care of the kid, can fight other people who are coming to get her, she's a master Sabacc player, she can build a ship from scratch. I don't know, she just, I love her character, I'm not criticizing it, but she is a very useful story element because it's like, oh, Mando's got to get that thing.
Yeah,
where are we going to give it? Oh, we'll just send him to Peli and she'll find it.
Yeah, just because we get no exposition doesn't mean that a person is not capable of doing those things. I mean, she herself says she's never been off world. So that means that she's had to survive on Tatooine literally her entire life. Mm-hmm. So for her to, you know, pick up several skills, you know, is not that far fetched. It is convenient though, that she is the plot mechanic in the storyline help the main character get to where he has to go, which, by the way, Mando is now the main character in the Book of Boba Fett. This is the way.
Yeah. Is this the right time to talk about that? I guess you brought it up now, so we have to.
Might as well.
It seems that I guess there's two ways to look at this. We can be angry about this and feel like we were duped into thinking we were getting some unique story about Boba Fett. And, you know, it would be among the tapestry of Star Wars stories. And you could be angry that really we've had the rug pulled out from under us. And this is just a way of transitioning us back to the Mandalorian. This is really the Mandalorian season 2.5.
Like an intermission.
I kind of feel like, you know, I'm sitting here and I have my bookshelves on the other side of me and I have a bunch of Star Wars books on them. And, you know, they all have intertwining stories and they don't follow one single character. That's just not how stories work. And so to be upset about bringing in other stories other characters is whatever. It is the character of Grogu of Mando is clearly so much stronger than Boba though. Mm-hmm. He just shows up in the show and all of a sudden, like, Boba isn't in this episode at all. And we forget about him.
Yeah.
It's not like at some point, 10, 15 minutes in, I wasn't even like, oh, when's he going to get back to Boba Fett? It's just like,
who?
Cool. How much longer can I watch this episode with Mando? This is great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how this episode did feel. It did feel good. It did feel like season 2.5.
Yeah.
And I do agree. I don't think it was, you know, we were technically not really, well, I think there were some comments from executive producer Robert Rodriguez, there were some comments as to what the show was going to be like, where it was going to be grittier, it was going to be more crime boss drama. So it's not unreasonable to say that there were certain expectations for the show. And it's also, to me, not unreasonable to say that those expectations haven't been fulfilled. Like, we got some things, but I feel like Boba Fett was more in his prime pre flashback does in that one episode of The Mandalorian. And he was better in that than what we've seen him here in the actual show that's supposed to be dedicated to his story.
Yeah.
But then again, like you said, it could be part of an overarching series of stories and then intertwining. And this portion of the journey of Star Wars just happens to be called the Book of Boba Fett. Just like in The Mandalorian, we were introduced to Ahsoka. And that episode was like half and half Ahsoka.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we're going to call it the Book of Ahsoka. It was just she appeared in that period of time, and now her story will be told elsewhere. So, yeah, those are my thoughts.
Yeah. Well, we finished this episode with a whole run of fan service by testing out the Starfighter, which is pretty awesome. I don't remember it being that awesome of a ship in episode one. Like, it looked cool. Like, it's so sleek. It has these like, you know, sharp lines and stuff. But in this show, this fighter is so fast. It's so sleek. It's like, I don't know if that's just because we just customized it and we made it twice as good as it was, or if we just didn't see how good it was back in.
I think it was both.
Phantom Menace.
I think it's both. I think the Starfighters were already pretty fast. Do you remember playing Rogue One for the N64?
Mm-hmm.
I remember there was a cheat where you can play as a Naboo Starfighter, and those were notorious for packing a punch. They were already pretty fast, but they did mod it. He literally has
Rogue
like
Squadron.
Rogue, what did I say?
Rogue Squadron. You said Rogue One. We both messed up Rogue
anyway,
One.
Anyway, do you remember playing Rebels back in the Nintendo 64?
I do. Thank you.
He has a mod. He has like a hot rod engine in the front, which one, how does he see past it? But I digress. Two, it looks like the old school 1950s hot rod like engines. With like the I forget that cylinder. I'm not good
carburetor.
With carburetor. Thank you. So that was, I think it looks pretty cool. It does pack quite the punch. Now, before anybody asks, it is confirmed. It is not Anakin Skywalker's N1 starfighter. The markings on the ship are identical, but they're not exactly the same. It just happens to be another ship.
You guys couldn't see me roll my eyes, but I just
almost not the quite exact amount of fan service.
It would have been just one step too far to make that Anakin's.
Yeah, it would have been. But speaking of Anakin, there was an Anakin reference in the Beggar's Canyon trench run. Mm-hmm. So that whole sequence was pretty fun. I gotta admit.
It was.
But it is also interesting is that it was almost shot for shot of Anakin's run through Baker's Canyon during the pod race.
Yeah.
And you can actually see the guardrails get broken that were broken by some other pod racer that gets, you know, kicked off on the side of the, or was it Anakin? I don't remember.
No, it's Anakin. Dude,
it was Anakin, right?
Have you ever seen Star Wars before?
What's a Star Wars?
Sebulba knocks Anakin off onto that service track, but he busts through the gate.
So he launches off the ramp.
You can see the pieces of the gate were all on the ground right there at the bottom. And then, he launches off and gets in front of Sebulba, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, there you go.
All of those were, going through like the tall rock structures he was weaving through, and then goes into the canyon. And then you see the ramp. It was all very cool.
So this just proves that Mando, if he's short on credits, can just do another pod race and he'll be fine.
I wonder if pod racing even exists. Like, I would assume there'd be no reason that this track wouldn't still be. I mean, it seemed like it was, the movie makes it seem like it was the most popular track in the circuit.
Jabba's dead.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point.
Unless Boba starts it up again. No,
but I mean, What's-His-Face took over for Jabba, so Bib. It's not like Bib Fortuna. It wasn't like...
But he's also dead now.
He is now, like as of like a week ago. But that track looked like, I mean, they hadn't picked up the pieces of the gate from 40 years ago. Like, that's also unrealistic that
that's true.
Those little pieces of wood didn't go anywhere in a desert.
I'm going to make
they
a
should
petition
be covered over by sand.
I make anyway. A petition to Disney and to Dave Filoni to bring back the Bunta Eve race. Cause I'd be cool to see. It'd be cool to see some more pod racing action.
As long as what's his name? Tim Stoops does the voice for the announcer guy.
Oh yeah. That'd be pretty cool.
Cause that he did them for the guys, you know, the two-headed guy. Mm-hmm. Is it Tim Stoops? Whatever. The guy from whose line is it anyway? But anyway, we transition from Beggar's Canyon and he pulls up and blasts into outer space and immediately gets pulled over.
And not just by anybody.
Yeah. Our guy from Kim's Convenience.
Yeah.
He's still working out in the outer rim. And that was just a cool little, I think they're still trying to weave that. There's that Rangers of the Republic show they've teased. I haven't heard anything about.
But. Yeah. I'm kind of hoping that this is not the last we see of his character in the other Rangers, but we kind of have to assume that it might be.
I'd guess he's in that show, a main part of it. So that's why they brought him back again. He recognizes Mando's voice. He's kind of coy about it. He's like, he lets him go. And then Mando just takes off. And the X-Wing pilot's like, how did he jump to hyperspace that quick? He doesn't have rings, or I didn't even see him, you know, charge up his hyperspace engine. He's like, no, that was his sublight engine.
Yeah. It packs that much of a punch.
He's just fast.
By the way, that scene where he sees the same Rodian kid on the Space Greyhound bus. Mm-hmm. is a callback to the original Superman movie where young Clark Kent is running, and then he's running parallel to a train, and there's a kid, and the kid in the train is the only one who sees him running that fast, and he waves and they wave at each other. So it's a kind of it's a similar nod to that.
That's cool. Well, Mando gets back, he lands, Fennec is there. She's like, hey, at the end of last episode, I said I was going to come find you, so I'm just closing the loop on that. Can you come fight with us? And Mando's like, yeah, sure, but can I please do it for free? And she's like, yeah, no problem. And
can I please do it for free? Like, he asked for permission. Can I please do this job for free, man? Thank you.
Yep. And end scene, end of show.
Oh, no, first he closes off with, yeah, I'll do it, but I need to go see, what does he say? I need to see a little friend first.
Yeah, I need to see a little friend first.
Right. It's clearly Babu Frick.
Yeah, Babu Frick is
clearly
definitely.
He and Din Djarin are tight.
Or it's any of the characters played by Warwick Davis.
There's several of them.
Yeah, there's one from Rebels. I mean, Rogue One. Or no, I mean Rogue Squadron. I mean, it's for Solo.
Right.
He plays the guy from Solo.
That's the one.
Yeah. So anyway, why don't we take a quick break? We transition to chapter 6 after we get back. I have nothing smart to say about this. We'll be right back.
Do you want to take a second to think of something smart for it?
I don't.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
This episode of Death Watch is brought to you by Skull Square Design Company. If you're a fan of Boba Fett, The Mandalorian, or anything Star Wars related, be sure to check out our shop for some great gifts for you and your family. Whether you're perusing the bazaar and Black Spire Outpost, or want to show your allegiance to Kylo Ren and the First Order, we have great wearable gifts for you to enjoy. Check out our shop at skullsquared.com, or find us on Instagram and TikTok at skullsquared. That's skull with a C, as in,
see y'all real soon!
And we're back and talking about chapter 6 of the Book of Boba Fett. From the desert comes a stranger.
I feel like we need to play the theme song again just at this point.
Oh, for the show?
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, that's a little bit too self-aggrandizing. This episode is too important for us to make it about ourselves.
Oh, okay.
So as we said a while ago, this episode was known to be written and directed by Dave Filoni. Obviously, Jon Favreau was in the room, but it's very obvious that this was written by Dave Filoni.
Jon Favreau was just looking over Dave's shoulder the entire time.
Yeah, he was like, oh, that's really good. That's really good.
Yeah, that's good.
I wish I came up with that. So this episode, if we thought the last one was about fan service, this one was like, anything you can do, I can do better.
The Grogu Power Hour.
Yeah. All about fan service here. Mm-hmm. I have this long list. We'll just kind of go through and expand on importance of things. But actually, I'm going to go back to the first part of this, is that this story for me was all over the place. Mm-hmm. We start with the cold open. We see Cobb Vanth. He's back, which is great. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a great character in one episode. He obviously doesn't have Boba's armor anymore, but he still has the same swag.
Yeah.
That he had.
That's his plot armor. It's his swagger.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
He's interacting with the pikes. You can tell the pikes are expanding even further because Mos Pelgo was told to be out in like the literal middle of nowhere. And he even says that, like, you guys might think you're in the middle of nowhere, but you're not. You're in my territory. So we get all that with him. And then we jump to the planet with Luke and Grogu. And then we jump back to Tatooine. And then we jump back to, it's just like, so much was going on here. This really needed to be a bunch of different episodes, whether it was 2 or 3, but talking about, I don't know, there's just a lot that they crammed into here because I guess John was like, hey, Dave, you can have one episode. He's like, oh, dang it. I'm going to get all of it into one episode. So there's a lot going on.
Yeah. It does set up a lot of things and a lot of theories, but more, you know, some relative plausible theories that we've seen in what technically is the future of Star Wars, like in the sequels, for instance, but there's still a lot of gaps that have yet to be filled.
Yep. So, the principal amount of this episode is on the planet where Luke is setting up the new Jedi Academy. There's a lot of that, of this whole sequence, or not even sequence, just storyline here that mirrors the Empire Strikes Back with Luke and Yoda, but in reverse. You can insert the audio clip of George Lucas saying it's like they rhyme.
It's like poetry.
Yeah, it's like poetry. They rhyme. But yeah, so that's kind of happening all throughout this. There's like the frog hops along and Grogu, the only thing he'll use the force for is for his own self benefit. He uses it to like try to eat the frog. Luke's like, come on. And then Luke does the thing where he lifts all the frogs out of the lake the same way that Yoda lifted the X-Wing out of the lake that Luke couldn't do. The temple structure looks like the structures that are on Octo that we see in The Last Jedi, the stacked rock, like gravity construction, like from an architectural standpoint, is actually very hard to do because there's no mortar.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the gravity. Mm-hmm. Does this technically count as 3D printing?
I mean, you're the expert on it, but I suppose this is automated deposition of material in a layer.
At the very least, he's using automated drones. He's using drones to build. So I guess it's sort of a way of 3D. Anyway.
Yeah, R2 is the site superintendent.
He's
kind of telling them all what to do. It does look a lot like Chris and I pulled up the screenshot from The Last Jedi when Luke's having the flashback about or maybe it's even in Rise of Skywalker, I forget. But no, it is Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. We flash it back to Kylo Ren destroying the temple in flames. It looks a lot like this main structure that they're building now is this one that's in the same flashback. So this is very likely the same spot from those.
Right.
From that movie.
Thanks, Ben.
It is what it is. I wonder if Grogu becomes a Knight of Ren, one of the Knights of Ren.
See, now I want that to happen just so I can see him in his tiny little like Knight of Ren helmet.
Everybody wants to see Grogu in a tiny little version of whatever, in the Mandalorian armor.
Don't you?
In the Knights of Ren. I mean, sure, but no. Anyway.
We're going to have an adorable time.
We get the exchanges between R2 and Ahsoka because Ahsoka comes into this episode for
some reason,
whatever reason.
Yeah.
Because it's Dave Filoni. I hate to be Dave Filoni's daughter because I feel like there's a competition in which girl he loves more, his daughter or Ahsoka, his created a character. I don't mean that seriously, but I do think he's obsessed with this character. She comes back. It's interesting to see her connecting with Luke in some ways. Like, obviously there was this whole, I'm not going to train Grogu because it's a bad idea. And even Mando's like, wait, why are you okay with Luke training him? You said it was a bad idea. And she gets a super weak answer. Like, it's because he chose to do it.
Because the writer said so.
Yeah. Because we need this to serve some other part of the plot.
I do feel like that was a very weak it is a weak response, both on the part of Ahsoka and then who, you know, on the overall story. And then she goes into this, you know, I can't force him to make a choice, which unfortunately is parallel to the end of the episode, which we'll get into later. But like the concept of choice is a theme here. And a lot of people in this episode have to make different choices. So,
yeah.
But what we have seen, though, is the consequences of not just making choices, but the consequences of imposing choice.
Like, yeah, sure.
So,
I think the other thing with Ahsoka is really just totally pulled back from like feeling like she has any responsibility is how it feels. Like, you know, she left the Jedi Order and she's like, I'm done with you guys. And she's been very, she's strict with that. She's not re-engaged with the Jedi in any way. She did take more ownership of responsibility in Rebels and in helping to overthrow the Empire for what, for what part she had. But she's like, you know, the baby boomers who are like, I'm just going to retire and pull back from the world. You guys do. I'm don't ask me for any help.
Do your thing, but I'm still going to show up every once in a while to give my opinion.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Ahsoka is I do agree with you. She's never, but at this point of her life, she's not a Jedi. She's very Jedi adjacent. Mm-hmm. I thought that she would have been against Luke trying to set up a new order, unless she's convinced that he's doing the right thing by doing it different.
Yeah.
I'm just not convinced that he is, or he did do it different. He sort of just did the same thing,
which does start to feel like that.
Yeah. Which is the consequences that we see that are happening in The Last Jedi and The Rise of Skywalker. The reason why Ben Solo is the way he is because Luke was doing the same thing over again.
Yeah. Well, and I think actually the whole reason that they brought Ahsoka into this episode was for her to say the line, "You're so much like your father." Mm. It was like a killer line. And it's not said in a critical way. It's because he's saying like, I just wonder if his heart's in it. He's like caring about Grogu. And she's like,
yeah,
man, you are so much like your father. He cared so much about people.
Yeah,
which is like not the hot take on, or that's not the normal take on Anakin, right? Because he fell to the dark side, became Darth Vader. For you to say like, oh, you're just like him because you care so much about people. That was who he was before he fell to the dark side, was caring about his mother. All of the elements of his like fall to the dark side were about caring for other people.
Yeah.
And so the at least redeemed version of that is what she sees in Luke. So that's cool. Let's see a couple other things. Well, we get the backpack running and flipping scene with like, looks like the same backpack, like that gray,
almost exactly
whitish backpack, that Yoda was in with Luke on Dagobah. We get a line, some lines when he like scales up the bamboo tree. It's like, the wide world exists in balance. He starts to kind of talk about the Force at large, which sounds a lot like the way he describes it to Rey, except without being dripped in cynicism and anger. So that was kind of interesting to see. And then we get like the remote, the kind of classic Jedi remote Luke trains with on the Millennium Falcon. And what did you think of how the
well, I thought it was kind of cute that he has to like leapfrog away from it. That's his only real defense. But then he's like, all right, I'd use the Force to like destroy it. And then plops in the water. And all I can think of is like, if I was Luke, that was my only one.
I thought the exact same thing. Like, how many drones or remotes does he have?
I mean, it's cool that he learned the lesson, but geez, you know how hard. There's no Amazon here, man. We're in the middle of nowhere.
No, I had the same feeling of like when my kids break something and was like, "Ah, what? Why did you break that?
Why?
No, we don't have it."
I mean, I don't want to yell at you, but I'm so mad right now. Okay.
Yep. And then one of the cooler things here too is Luke's doing some. He's transitioning between lightsaber forms and practicing. I'm sure, you know, we make fun of Star Wars nerds as hosts of a Star Wars podcast, but the ones who are more nerdier about it than we are, I'm sure could call out more aspects of these lightsaber forms. One of them was the move that Anakin does in some of the pictures from, like, it's this move where he has like the lightsaber facing directly down as if he's blocking someone, like kind of at his back shoulder, and Luke does that move. Mm-hmm. And that was that's a move that Hayden Christensen made up when he was, like, you know, playing around with lightsaber. He was like, I think Luke should do this, and then it became a move that they gave to the video game company. So then whenever you, like, Anakin's running around and he's got his lightsaber down like this,
that's a cool callback.
Yeah, good callback. And then, okay, this, like, final scene with Grogu and Luke was kind of, like, so much happening in a very short period of time. But he sits him down. He's like, your friend came back. He gave you a gift. It's this chainmail shirt. And he's like, but what would you like to see what's behind door number two? I kind of felt like it was torture. Like, mm-hmm. Why is Luke doing this?
Yeah.
Like, you know, we're worried about emotion and torment, all these things. And he's like almost intentionally leaning into it. And so Luke offers him Yoda's lightsaber.
Who's going to say no to that?
Okay, sure. But where does he get this from?
I don't know.
Like, the last time I saw this, he got it knocked out of his hands fighting Palpatine in the Senate chamber. I'm certain Palpatine went down there and picked it up. So,
yeah, I just saw this on Twitter, how some of the original or at least maybe the more canonized authors, they talk about it. One theory is Yoda could have had multiple lightsabers. Maybe it wasn't just the one. Maybe he had one just sort of lying around in Dagobah. It's a convenient plot device.
Sure is.
But, you know,
Yoda stopped by Walmart on his way to Dagobah and picked up another lightsaber.
He's had some spares. He just has a couple of spare lightsabers just lying around in his bunk.
Yeah.
As to the how, you know, it's there or the why, it's the same thing as, like, it's the exact same argument as how did Luke Skywalker, or how did they find Luke Skywalker's lightsaber after his hand got cut off in Bespin?
Yeah. So one thing I'm wondering is, because so Maz Kanata got it from trading, and I think some technician found Luke's lightsaber at, you know, in the bottom of that shaft.
Okay.
Sold it to somebody. Eventually Maz Kanata got it. Mm-hmm. Probably what could have happened with Yoda's, somebody found it.
Some janitor in the Senate. He's just like sweeping up and like, oh, what's this thing? And he sells it on the Jedi black market or whatever.
Exactly. Or maybe it's something that Palpatine kept with him, like, forever.
For a personal memento.
Yeah, had it in his, like, his private chamber on the Death Star, and in the wreckage on that Endor moon that we see in The Rise of Skywalker, someone found it, or I don't know.
There's also in Fallen Order, there's a quest where you play as Luke Skywalker. No, not Fallen Order. I'm sorry. It was one of the other video games. I think it was, I forget which one it was, but you play as Luke Skywalker and you're going on a mission and you're looking for some sort of Sith artifact, like a compass of some kind. And it was known that the Emperor had, like, these storehouses all over the galaxy of his own private collection. And Luke was going to look for them, you know, possibly for, like, holocrons or things like that. So it's possible that's how he came upon. And it kind of plays well with the character of Palpatine, who had a lot of ego and pride. He would absolutely hold on to Yoda's lightsaber.
For sure. I think that's totally plausible.
I think that's a plausible theory. But this comes to the point where we talked about choice, and it seems like it's an impossible choice that Luke is giving Grogu. You know, Ahsoka talked about choice. Din Djarin makes a choice. Mm-hmm. Ahsoka says, you know, if you don't, you could give it to him, but you're going to be interrupting this whole thing that we talked about attachments and such. And then I think Ahsoka was surprised by his decision. Din says, yeah, you know what? You give it to him. I'll let him be. Let him grow and do his thing. That was a pretty mature decision.
Yeah.
Luke, on the other hand, is giving Grogu an impossible choice. You get the chainmail or you get the lightsaber. But if you get the lightsaber, you can't see the Mandalorian anymore. So it's like, you can't see your dad forever.
Yeah. Well, and even he has says this line, because he doesn't quite say like you could never see him, like you're forbidden from seeing him, yeah, or something. Like, but you'll, like you'll be dedicated to this and doing a lot of other things in a short time for you as a lifetime for others.
Yeah.
So you may just be, you know, doing something for a little while for in your lifetime, but Mando's going to live and die in that time period.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So and that's the cliffhanger the episode leaves on is, you know, which do you choose?
Yeah, I think that's going to have some consequences. There's going to be consequences to that. I can already foresee it.
So the last like story segment of this, Mando comes back and he checks in with Boba. We don't hear from Boba. He literally has no line in this episode either.
just a nod.
We see him. Yeah, but he has no lines. Mando is like, oh yeah, I can go get some help. He goes to Mos Pelgo, talks to
Cobb Vanth.
They do their whole thing, but then Cobb Vanth, or the sort of the big, honestly, what is the title of this story, mm-hmm. is From the Desert a Stranger Comes, making this character we're about to say the like main point of the episode, right?
Yeah.
Cad Bane shows up in very traditional, probably Kurosawa, if I had to guess, movie form, like as a mirage on the horizon, slowly walking into the Western streets.
Very Eastwood. It's very traditional Western too. Now, did you think it was him right from the jump as soon as
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I did too.
Like, you see the large brim hat.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no one else wears cowboy hats in this show anyway.
Yeah. I audibly gasped when I saw the tiny shadow in the distance. I'm like, no, it can't be. Possibly can't be. And as the figure gets bigger and bigger in the horizon, it's like, oh, yeah, it's absolutely him. It's absolutely Cad Bane.
So he shows up. He's like, you guys need to back down and just let the pikes do their thing. Mm-hmm. The douchey new deputy comes out and screws everything up.
Yeah.
Starts to shoot him. We know that Boba or that Cad Bane is like the fastest shot in the galaxy. Saw it several times in the Clone Wars, but whips out his pistol, shoots him. Shoots both of them. He hits Cobb Vanth in the shoulder, which seems like a very non-lethal blow, although his body's laying limp on the ground just to try to make some
dramatic.
Maybe he's not okay. Yeah, he's going to be fine. But the other guy, you know, he takes like 9 shots to the chest, so I think he's probably had it.
Tis but a scratch.
Cad Bane pieces out. He's clearly going to be on the Pike side. That's going to be some part of this. I mean, the 3 seconds we were in Boba's palace, they're like the mayor has left the city. It seems like the Pikes have been gathering soldiers for a week.
Scheduled vacation.
Yes, scheduled vacation. It was like annoying that they brought him into this episode to deliver that line.
That one line. No, he's on sabbatical.
Yeah,
he's been dealing with some things. Thank you.
And so he pieces out. There's clearly this like. They're expecting the battle to happen any moment because the finale of the series is happening next week. So, you know, it's got to. That's kind of where everything is left in this episode. Like the big things here, we get that flashback of the clones attacking the temple, clearly going to get Grogu. Like it was some initiative from the very beginning, not like he happened to survive because somebody like rescued him.
Still doesn't answer the question as to who sneaks him out. By the way, do you think it was Jocasta Nu in the front ahead of the clone troopers? Because it kind of looked just like her.
It's a good question. I didn't think so. And I thought it was canon that she made it off to somewhere and gathered some Jedi together at some point who then get killed by Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. So I didn't think she died in the temple. But clearly those Jedi were there to protect Grogu. Like they weren't fighting the clones. They were defending Grogu.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we see Mando's story. He's still struggling with attachment, but he also gives it up for the good of Grogu, like continues to do that.
Can we hear some about growth?
Exactly. But with his helmet on, we see the stuff about the Mos Pelgo stuff, just showing that the Pikes are just continuing to grow on the planet. We see the Jedi Academy being set up, which is kind of cool. But Luke is still kind of like setting up the Jedi Academy in a similar way that the old Jedi were, and which is like not consistent with like the Legends stories about Luke, who got married and had kids and like obviously had attachment. And I kind of expected something like that to maybe happen. But it didn't.
Marriage aid is not happening, guys. It's not happening. Sorry. Did you catch the crate dragon skull?
Yeah, that was like, funny.
On the hood of the sandcrawler.
Yeah.
That's the best.
I couldn't tell if they had just found it and they were bringing it back somewhere, or if they were like literally decorating their sandcrawler permanently with the crate
they
skull.
They tricked out their sandcrawler with the hood ornament.
Great.
That's staying. Now we need to talk about Cad Bane for just a second, because his showing up is a big deal. And for those who may not know, if you haven't seen the Clone Wars, he was a notorious bounty hunter who was basically the Boba Fett of his time. And Boba Fett, as a young child, well, young-ish, there was a deleted scene where young Boba and Cad Bane have a shootout. And that's what leads to Boba Fett's infamous dent in his helmet. And then Cad Bane supposedly got shot in the head. No one's ever really explained it in canon, to my understanding, why Cad Bane was no longer around for a while. But what is known is that he and Boba Fett have beef.
Okay. So you know how Mando gets shot by like a billion blaster bolts throughout the last several seasons?
Yeah.
None of them leave even dents. They don't even leave scorch marks.
Right.
So what the heck kind of pistol does Cad Bane have that it put a dent in a Beskar helmet?
So there's two possible responses. One, whatever the equivalent of plot armor is on a weapon. Or
it's not plot armor.
It's a plot weapon.
Plot weapon, yeah.
So he's got plot weapon, or they scrubbed that episode and that storyline for exactly that kind of reasoning. Someone really said in the writer's room, but it's Beskar. How could he have dented it if it was Beskar? So that's probably why they never showed it. But the point is,
you know what? His blaster probably shoots Beskar bullets.
He got one. He got a single Beskar slug on him. That makes all the more sense in the world. But the fact that he showed up is going to be important. We're going to see him in the next episode. Who knows if we'll see him after that? Probably not. But the fact that it's a Boba versus Cad Bane showdown, I'm really hoping that that's what we're going to see. At the rate the show has been going, that is probably the exact opposite of what's going to happen.
Yeah. So, finale predictions.
Yeah.
Obvious. So here's what I'm thinking, because of how slowly they played the first five episodes and how much they're trying to cram into this. I think the strategy is not to resolve the Pike conflict next week. I think that they're either going to set up season two, which they didn't announce or anything, but, or that this is their way of transitioning into season three of The Mandalorian, is a carryover of this Pike conflict that Mando is now involved in. I don't think it resolves next week.
Yeah. I think it does seem like there's a type of resolution, it's temporary. I do think that everything that has happened so far is a setup from Mando's story at large, which would likely include him being a part of whatever Boba's operation is, or at the very least an extension of, you know, him doing his own thing, trying to probably bring peace to the galaxy or Mandalore or whatever. But it's not going to magically just be resolved overnight with one battle. At best, they'll be like, okay, this is more formidable than we expected. Let's retreat for a bit and regroup, and then we'll head back to Tatooine at a future date.
Well, I mean, given the amount of money that's like flowing through here, I mean, he mentioned at the beginning when Cobb Vanth had them leave the spice there, they're like, this box is worth more than your whole town. Mm-hmm. The Pikes are definitely not going to give up after, you know, one little conflict.
So obviously, it's been six episodes in and we have yet to see Mace Windu. which obviously means he's showing up in the last episode, because there's only one more episode left in the whole series. So this is it. This is when Mace Windu is showing up. He's been on Tatooine the whole time.
Last chance for you guys to get your shirts
right under our noses. And I definitely do see a confrontation between Cad Bane and Boba, or at least that's what I'm hoping for, the original, you know, sharpshooters to have a shootout in the dusty streets of Mos Espa.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to another edition of How to Be a Better Boss, Armorer Edition for Chapter 5. Yes, business. Yes, business time. Mm-hmm. First point, stick to your core values. This is how the Mandalorians survive. This is how businesses thrive.
This is the way.
Come up with your goal. This is the way. You stick to your values and you don't stray for them. Work with your tools, not against them. This is, you know, Mando's fighting with this sword and not using it the way it was intended. You know, if you have things that help you to work, don't make it more difficult for yourself by trying to do something that they're not meant to do.
It's not that hard to make a spreadsheet, people. It's not hard to save or print a PDF.
Yep.
One point that I took away from the armor in that conversation, she said, persistence without insight will lead to the same outcome. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that saying. Mando just didn't learn the first time. He keeps thinking, I'm going to do the same thing over and over again, expect a different result.
Yep.
So the point from that is to learn from your failures. Don't repeat them. If something doesn't work, pivot until you reach a better outcome.
Pivot.
Another Friends reference. And then also listen to people who have more experience than you. There's wisdom in listening.
And why don't we do another edition of How to Be a Better Boss, Skywalker edition.
Yeah.
And learn from Master Skywalker, Jedi Master Trainer.
Yeah. I appreciate that he had a lot of patience with Grogu. Grogu is still technically like childlike. So he has a lot of patience with him. It's good for an employer to have patience with their employees. Sometimes there's a lot for them to unpack before they can really achieve their goals.
You know what I just realized is that Grogu is the ultimate troll on the 50-year-old Star Wars fans who are kids, but they're 50, but they act like kids.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Don't be like Grogu. Well, sometimes be like Grogu, but don't be patient. Like, be patient. I like how Luke tried to entice his learning, Grogu's learning, by helping him succeed with things that he could relate to. In this case, his snackies, his little froggy nuggets. But like Yoda also did the same thing with Luke. You know, Luke was like so obsessed with his X-Wing, and Yoda's like, yo, watch this. And then just uses the Force to levitate the X-Wing. Easy, right? So he's giving him things that he can relate to so that he can achieve his goals easily.
Yep. Sometimes you need to show them how it's done and then give them a chance to emulate it. It's when Luke's like, I feel like he's remembering more than I'm actually teaching him. Giving Grogu opportunities to either watch him doing the jumping and flipping, and then, or giving him the impetus, like with the remote shooting at him, just it reminds him and shows him how to do it.
Yeah. But also to that point, sometimes you do need to give a helping hand. You pointed this out. I didn't even see this the first time. When the first time we see Luke and Grogu walking in the forest, Luke is using the Force to pick him up. And I thought, why is Grogu doing these little like Force skips? But then when I saw the scene again, you see Luke's hand moving.
Yeah. So it was a really interesting, I mean, it fits in with the storyline, but it was also like a plot device because they wanted a more zoomed out view of Luke walking for a long period of time with Grogu. Right. And Grogu, the little puppet, walks very slowly.
Yes.
Because whenever we see him walking and following other characters, it's only for 3 seconds because he can't keep up with them. So he needed plot device, needed Luke to pick him up and they carry him
needed
forward.
To CGI out the puppeteers. Yeah.
Literally carry him forward with the story.
Carry him in the story. So this is one point where I would actually say do the opposite of what's being shown. Don't give your people impossible solutions. Luke Skywalker sees the consequences to this in Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker. Sometimes things are just not black and white. So give your people a chance to find alternative solutions that you may not necessarily see.
Yep. Well, that's all for these episodes. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate your patience letting us get out episode 5 with episode 6 as well. If you like these episodes, please subscribe and share. You can write a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also rate our show on Spotify.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Death Watch Podcast, on TikTok at Death Watch Cast, and you can email us at deathwatchpodcast@gmail.com. We also got some new merch that we just dropped on our Etsy shop, Emotionally Damaged by Dave Filoni. I'm sure you can all relate to that. If you want to snag yourself some, you can check out our Etsy shop and any of our links on our socials.
Thanks for listening. This is the way.
This is the way.